Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 5:30 British Summer Time. And this is the big picture long-term audio that we have every Friday. But before we kick off with that, I will just go through what has been happening in the markets today, at least the major themes. I won't spend too long on this. Well, big news is that oil has made another new high. That high is at 67.10. So this really is quite a big move. And natural gas hit a high today of 9.91. That was up 60 cents. It's currently off that high. It's at 9.68 at the moment, but that is definitely starting to accelerate. And as we teach in the chart seminar, acceleration is an ending. So we don't know when it's going to end, but when it does, it will probably end with a bang. So we'll have to keep an eye on that one. The dollar firmed up in here today. Euro is currently down about 42 points. It's at 124.29. Japanese yen is holding up a bit better. That's down 13 points. I bought copper today because, sorry, I bought platinum today. Excuse me, because it did look like it was. Well, it was the low. Well, it was close enough to the low of the day, and I really do think that that is really looking to be quite a good pattern where that support held at $9. So I was able to pick that up at 9.18, including the spread bet dealing costs. So that's really just another position added to my dollar or my bets against the dollar, and I think that really is the top we've seen there, at least a medium-term top in the US dollar. Just a quick move on, or sorry, a quick word on equity markets. The Nikkei was pretty much flat today, as was the Hang Seng, and the ASX in Australia was up 8 points. Europe was pretty much down across the board. Amsterdam was down over 1%, but the CAC and the DAX, CAC was down 0.72 of 1%, and the DAX was down a third of 1%. So really, not they were down, but since they had very good gains earlier on in the week, that's still, really quite close to the highs. The Nasdaq, on the other hand, is starting to look like very much of a sort of a correcting phase. Dell had terrible results today, and I think it's down 7 or 8%. So that is really weighing on the Nasdaq. And it's currently down 28 points, which is 1.3%. The composite is at 21.46. The S&P, which is still very range bound above the highs of the year, of the old highs of the year around 1220, and so is the Dow Jones. That's down 107 points, just over 1%. That's also very, very range bound. So we will see next week what these things have in store for us, but the Nasdaq was the leader on the upside, so it could very well be the leader on the downside. We really have to keep an eye on that. And just I suppose leading that point really does lead us into the big picture type stuff, which is the Wall Street leash effect. If the US is steady to rising, it lets out lots of room for markets around the world to go up. But if we see the US starting to fall, it's really not that long before all of these other US or emerging markets or global markets really get pulled back in, because the US is just so predominant, and pretty much all other markets are just high beta US. So when the US is rising, it's going to leave out a lot of room. So then, thinking about the Nikkei, which is above that 12,000 level, if we do see that, if this is turning into a more of a top than a consolidation in the US, that's going to put a lot of pressure on the Nikkei to hold that gain. So it's it might be a little bit presumptuous yet to start saying that we've broken out of the base. What will be the signal, though, that will tell us that we've broken out of the base there? And what will tell us is once we've broken out, we've consolidated above it and then moved up again, that's really o the only time we'll know when the base has been broken. You might think that that's a long time, but Considering this has been a bear market for over 15 years, there is plenty of upside. So, especially on leverage plays, it's not the certainly not the end of the world at all. Now, we think that we are in a secular bear market, and secular bear markets, that's a generational long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. Another way of saying it would be that it is a period of mean reversion. So, at the moment, investors have really got used to getting very little in the way of dividend yields. Back in, excuse me, 20 years ago, the dividend yield on the S&P was over 6%. Today, I'm just going to pull that up. It's more like it's 2%. So while yields are rising, and I think I posted a graph of yields last week, of dividend yields on the S&P, while yields are rising and it is quite a good uptrend, they have a long way to go yet. When we say that it's a generational long period, it means that it's a generation, it could be as much as 10 to 20 years. And we think that that is going to be in rolling waves. You will have very good rallies like the one we've had right now, which has lasted for a couple of years, but these will be succeeded by fairly sharp sell-offs where we will hit new lows. Then that will take a couple of years. Then we'll get another good rally. But the thing to bear in mind is that over a period of time, you're going to have contracting valuations and rising yields. There's a very good chance that the S&P will have a sort of a glass ceiling over it at 1575 or thereabouts. In other words, back near where the 2000 highs were, just like the Dow had a ceiling in I think it was the 70s, 60s, 70s, around 1025. But again, this thing takes a long time. There is also an enormous amount of liquidity getting pumped into the markets, and that's really started with the Asian crisis, then the 2000, then Y2K problem in 2000 when the bubble burst in 2001, then there was 9/11. So what that's really that's just pumping and pumping money into the markets, and the Fed has really, and central banks around the world, because the Fed have really sown the seeds of the next inflationary cycle. The way they've done that is that they've been selling bonds. What other countries have been doing is printing money to buy bonds. So, and that mercantilist situation between Asia and the US, we've talked a lot about in the past, where the Asian economies have been buying treasuries to keep down the values of their own currencies. But what that means is that for every dollar that the US prints, there's an equal dollar being printed somewhere else in the world to balance it out. So there's an enormous amount of liquidity being pumped into the market. We are in, we do believe that we're at the beginning of a new inflationary cycle. There are a number of different ways that this can be played, and our two big themes are resources. And that primarily that is supply inelasticity. Many resources, particularly the metals, have been in a 20-year bear market, as has energy. So this is we're really only in the quite early stages of this move. I mean, there hasn't been a refinery built in the US in nearly 20 years. There hasn't been a lead smelter in the US built, I think, since 1976. So there is a massive underinvestment in infrastructure. This is not something that can be immediately turned on overnight. It's going to take a long time to develop this. And the reason you have every time you have a commodity boom, there is an excuse. This time it's China and India. Well, the next time, when another 40 years' time, is bound to be something else. But what we're seeing at the moment in our second theme is Asian emerging markets. So they're very linked. But while China is a fantastic opportunity for a lot of people. It's not the easiest place to make money because of the apartheid there. Communist capital is a bit of a communist capitalism is a bit of an oxymoron. At the moment, we are making money there, and the Hang Seng is doing very well, and the Shanghai A shares are rallying quite well. That's because the government has decided that they do want us to make money there, and they're supporting the stock market. But as soon as they change their minds, well, there's nothing they're going to stop those markets coming back down because of the lack of transparency. Now, a lot of people have been, and I've been one of them, talking a lot about Japan because this move has really been quite important, and hopefully it'll hold. But one of the things that a lot of people have been talking about is uncoupling, and that is sort of the holy grail for brokers. Uncoupling really is a bit of a myth, because all markets are interconnected, and if the US, which has most of the money in the world, if that starts going down, it's going to be very difficult for any other market to go up independently of it, completely independently of it. So, and I think that a lot of people would be looking to Japan and saying, well, will Japan be a good store of money when we get the next correction? And the chances are that that is going to be quite a risky business. And I've already talked about the leash effect. Now, treasuries, because of all the money that's been printed out there, and we have been in a bull market in the treasuries for 20 years when Paul Volcker came in and in 1981 and brought, I think it's 1981, brought inflation back under control. Well, treasury prices have been pretty much rising ever since, and yields have been falling. We do have a loss of momentum in the yields right now, and that's probably the most important chart in the world. Because when we see those yields starting to rise, and that could be really, it's going to take a long time, but that is one just to keep an eye on every couple of months. Have a look at the yield chart. When we see it moving up from 4 to 6% and breaking out, that's going to really be a very key thing, and there'll be a lot of different things happening in the markets at that time. But the thing is that when we do get that sort of weakness in bonds, it will unnerve investors. And when long-term rates eventually start to rise, then that is going to hit stock markets. Another thing, of course, that could hit stock markets is the oil price. As oil gets closer and closer to, excuse me, to that inflation-adjusted price of nearly $100 back in 1981, that's going to put a great deal of pressure on the stock markets. There's a couple of news stories out there today saying that it's starting to play a role in holding markets back right now. But if we see oil up at $95, it's going to do more than a little bit to hold back markets. It's going to be quite a stiff headwind. The reason we're looking at the Nasdaq right now is because it did lead on the upside, and leaders often lead on the when they lead on the upside, they'll also lead on the downside. They lead in both directions. Then moving on to the dollar, it looks like the dollar is sort of bottoming out. The thing about currencies is that you rarely see these V reversals in currencies. If you look at the top 3 years ago in the dollar, you'll see that it was very choppy, and it's a big rangy pattern. There is every chance that we're going to see the same sort of thing at the bottom, where we're going to see maybe a multiple year ranging pattern around the bottom here, ranging between 80 and 90. Right now, it looks like we've seen a medium-term top in the dollar. There's a good chance we're going to go down and test those lows again. Of course, that is going to have a pretty big impact, as particularly on precious metals, which have been doing really rather well in the last couple of weeks. Let's see here. So the thing is then that platinum has moved up to new highs. Gold, a lot of people only a couple of weeks ago were forecasting it to be around $400. It's moved up. It touched, well, it came very close to touching 450 today and didn't like it much and has fallen back a bit, but it is looking really rather good. And in other currencies, it has maintained the break above the highs, particularly in the euro and the Japanese yen. So that is also telling us that we're entering the second psychological perception stage of the bull market in precious metals, where investors start to see that gold or any of the other precious metals, monetary metals, are a good store of value. And that is becoming increasingly true. Of course, I was looking at the oil price. Oh, sorry, the not the oil price, the natural gas price today, and it hit ni about 9.90, and I was absolutely itching to go in and short it because I was saying to myself, I've missed half of the upswing, and it would be really easy to just get in here and try and short it. But I held back because I had a reality check, and it is sort of suicidal. It's actually holding quite well now. It's at 971. But it does lead on to one of our rules of thumb, which is never pay up for metals or for commodities, because when they're at these high prices, they are capable of having quite big bungee jumps, but they're almost impossible to pick when those things are going to happen because these markets move just so quickly. So I didn't short natural gas. I'm going to wait until we have the correction, and I'm going to buy into it. That's probably the best strategy, because with these things are in secular bull markets, so we're going to have a progression of rising lows. It'll probably come back to close enough to those lows, and that's probably going to be a good time to buy it when it's a bit cheaper. With all that in mind, I think that's pretty much it. I wish you all a fantastic weekend, and if there's anything at all I can do to improve the service, please don't hesitate to contact me, and thank you very much for your time.